the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. There is a lot to talk about today, but I got to tell you, I wrote an article overnight entitled Richard Dawkins Jumps the Shark. Now, that's one of those terms from American popular culture that makes sense to some and may lead others to scratch their heads. That's all right in the title because I want people to be scratching their heads. It goes back to one of the key insights of the 1980s. All right, here it is. It is possible for a character in American culture to become a parody of himself. It is a slang term now, this jumping the shark, that refers to whenever someone being himself or herself becomes a parody. They have simply played their part to the max, and they've exceeded some line of boundary of sense, and they now have made of themselves a laughingstock. And that is exactly what Richard Dawkins has done. One of the most influential atheists in the world, the man who until very recently held the Charles Simonyi Chair in the Public Understanding of Science at Oxford University, is now in the news for his personal financing of an atheist summer camp for kids with only 24 slots in Great Britain. It's one of those things that you almost think has come as a matter of satire, a parody, literally. Here's a news report in which we are told that atheists are going to be holding a secularist summer camp in Great Britain. Now, these kinds of things have popped up here and there, and as a matter of fact, in America, there are, some say now, six of these. But in Great Britain, with the personal esteem and reputation of Sir Richard Dawkins hanging in the balance here, they're going to be having classes in evolution in the morning. They're going to go canoeing and swimming in the afternoon, and they're going to sing Imagine by John Lennon in the evening. Imagine there's no religion. I just don't think it's going to sell. And that's why the funny part of all of this, the parody in all of this, is that he has attached his personal reputation to a camp that could only hold 24 kids. Now, we're going to be talking about the new atheism today in terms of its challenge and its predicament, because the new atheism finds itself now in the year 2009 in a very interesting predicament. If you go back just 2 or 3 years, you see this plethora of books that came out, bestsellers, whether it's The God Delusion or any of these other books that came out. You've got Dennett and Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and so many others, and they're coming out, they're on the talk shows, and they do not seem to be having much of an impact, not in terms of popular culture. Now, they certainly have an impact on the college and university campus, and one of the things we're going to be talking about today is that that is their key purpose, and some of them are honest about that. They really don't think they're going to penetrate down at the level of popular culture, but if they can get our kids when they go to the university, they can wait until then. But evidently, for those that can't wait, you got summer camp, open only to 24 students, in which it's going to be evolution in the morning, canoeing in the afternoon, and no more kumbaya, now it's going to be John Lennon in the evening. You know, this reminds me of something that I read in the newspaper not long ago, in which someone said, sounds to me like we have a baby boomer that's fighting getting old. John Lennon in the evening. Imagine. We're going to be talking about that when we come back. The phone number is going to be 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to be talking about how to respond to the new atheism. I've written a book about this, Atheism Remix, published by Crossway Books. There have been all kinds of responses, but I think it's good to take stock here. As we're in the middle of the summer of the year 2009, if they're holding a summer camp for atheists, then Christians probably ought to be having some intelligent conversation about it. In terms of what it means, what it doesn't mean, and I'll tell you one thing it means, and this is very interesting. It means that they recognize that those crucial years, especially of older childhood and adolescence, are big worldview-shaping years. We're going to talk about that when we come back as well. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Follow us always at Twitter. Just sign up to follow Albert Mohler. And you can go to the website always, albertmohler.com, and send us mail just by writing us at mail@albertmohler.com. Now, yesterday at the White House, there was this event. And just as we went on the air yesterday, we talked about the fact that it was being held. It was a meeting of homosexual activists in the White House where the President of the United States celebrated and commemorated with them the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion. That's what it's called because of a police raid on a homosexual bar in Greenwich Village. The protests and riots, the political action, as they call it, that came in the wake of that really became the catalyst for the gay rights movement as we know it today. It has been stunningly successful over the last 40 years. I guarantee you, you go back 40 years ago when that was going on, you could not imagine that there would be a president of the United States that would be welcoming homosexual activists in the White House and really sounding like he was apologizing to them for not getting with the program fast enough. Let's listen to the President of the United States speaking yesterday. This is President Barack Obama.
I know that many in this room don't believe that progress has come fast enough, and I understand that. It's not for me to tell you to be patient any more than it was for others to counsel patience to African Americans who were petitioning for equal rights a half century ago. But I say this, we have made progress, and we will make more. And I want you to know that I expect and hope to be judged not by words, not by promises I've made, but by the promises that my administration keeps. And by the time that you see, we've been in office 6 months now. I suspect that by the time this administration is over, I think you guys will have pretty good feelings about the Obama administration.
Those last words are the key words. And in an editorial that I published earlier today, I went back to that. The president said to those who were gathered there in the White House, we've been in office 6 months now. I suspect that by the time this administration is over, I think you guys will have plenty good feelings about the Obama administration. End quote. Well, that's a pledge. That's a promise. And you'll notice that it was greeted with enthusiasm, but I think it was also greeted with a sense of relief and affirmation. Yes, they really do believe that things are going to go their way with this administration, and they have every reason to believe that. The president campaigned on a very activist program for gay rights. Since he's been in the White House, he's backed off a bit of that, but only in timing. That's the crucial issue, only in timing. We've come back time and time again to talk about how cultural change comes by incrementalism. Now, in almost any major movement, there is some mixture of incrementalism, that is small steps, and then huge steps. You've got small steps, such as in the civil rights movement, and then you have big steps, such as the Voting Rights Act. But when it comes to the gay rights movement, they're looking for some big acts in this administration, and the one to watch right now is whether or not the president takes the lead in repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, because that's where the pressure is coming on him. We have here a president who is avowedly pro-abortion in terms of his understanding of the fact that every woman at every point should have the right to an abortion. He ran on that platform. He is consistently held by that platform. But he also holds to a bit of incrementalism there, talking about abortion reduction. Now, on the homosexual rights agenda, he's really pulled back from a lot of this rhetoric because he has other legislative and political agendas. He wants to get his health care program through the Congress. He wants to get cap and trade through Congress. He wants to get, of course, his financial packages through the Congress and the budget and all the rest. And in order to get all that done, he has to limit the number of political hot potatoes he's throwing on the table. And yet every one of these that was involved in his campaign thinks that the timing is now. Now, I want to draw to your attention the fact that the changes that are being contemplated here are not small. Even though they are incremental, they're not small. Extending spousal benefits to some domestic partners of federal employees, that's not a small change. You're redefining marriage by the compliments and the rights and privileges that are given to marriage in terms of that arrangement. When you start doing what the president did yesterday, in the White House acknowledging that they are framing a policy to include transgendered persons in anti-discrimination policies of the federal government, that is not a small change. It is incremental, but it is not small. Because when you're talking about transgender persons being included there, that sends a signal through the entire culture. And you say, well, I don't have a problem with that. Well, most people don't have a problem, a big problem, with policies that seem to be remote from where they live. Now, that's a shame. That's, frankly, moral cowardice and a lack of responsibility, but that's where most people live. They're busy. The issues that get their main attention are the ones they face every day. Well, how about facing this one? How about on the news reports of children that go to school and on Friday their teacher is a man, when they come back on Monday the teacher is a woman? Same person. and they're told they can't even pull their child out. The child's just going to have to deal with this. The family's just going to have to deal with this. What about a situation here very close to home where you had someone who was a clerk in the department, presented as a woman, helping people, women, change clothes, and it turned out that only recently a woman. These anti-discrimination policies have ramifications that shoot through the entire culture. Just remember this, politics is often about incrementalism, but incrementalism does not mean that morally and culturally speaking, they are small changes. Just listen to the White House assure those activists yesterday, by the time we leave office, you're going to be really, really happy with us. We'll be right back to talk about an atheist summer camp and what that means. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It was on September the 20th of the year 1977 that the Fonz jumped the shark. It happened on an episode of the sitcom Happy Days, a three-part episode in which the Fonz, played by Harry Winkler, actually jumped over a shark while water skiing. Now, just in case you're wondering what that has to do with Richard Dawkins and his atheist summer camp, just about everything. TV critics responded to that particular show by pointing to its absurdity. Here you had a sitcom that was implausible at best, that had just skipped completely out of its orbit of reason and was now so desperate for ratings that it had gone to the absurdity of having the Fonz dressed in swim trunks and a leather jacket jumping on skis over a confined shark. The TV critic said, this means the end of the program. If you can't come up with better than this, if your desperation is down to this, if you've become such a cartoon of yourself, you're down to this, get off the air. You've jumped the shark. Since then, jumping the shark has become a matter of American popular culture, applied to cars, applied to, of course, all kinds of entertainment, and applied to people who become parodies of themselves by basically following a script to its illogical conclusion. That's what Richard Dawkins has done. Richard Dawkins became famous years ago as a scientist, an evolutionist, yes. Perhaps the most articulate defender of evolutionary theory, especially through his theory of what he called the selfish gene. He also had a theory of information known as the meme, whereby memes are bits of information that are handed down through an evolutionary process. Largely the survival of memes and genes, he said, through his theory of the selfish gene. This explains how life came into being. Now, I am an ardent opponent of evolutionary theory, but I got to tell you, if you wanted a smart defender of evolution, Richard Dawkins was your man. And he was such an ardent evolutionist that he eventually took a chair at Oxford University in what was called the public understanding of science. And then what really came out of Richard Dawkins was a turn away from what we might call serious scientific endeavor towards the proponents of atheism. And what you had in Richard Dawkins in recent years is fame that comes not from science itself. He's kind of resting on those laurels. Now he is known primarily as an evangelist, I think that's the right term for it, for atheism. And, you know, his book, The God Delusion, has become a bestseller, selling in the millions and the hundreds of thousands here in the United States, millions worldwide. I was in Turkey, and there in that Islamic cultured country, you had Richard Dawkins' books right out there. And he's become a celebrity worldwide, not as a scientist, but rather as an atheist. And he has been pushing that case. He's jumped the shark. He's done so in two ways in the last year. First of all, we talked on this program a few months ago about the fact that he was personally involved in lending his personal credibility to putting signs on the side of London buses. Now, the signs were supposedly to counter theistic signs put on by Christians. Their sign was, this is what it read, there's probably no God, so get on with your life. Now, the problem is, there's probably no God turns out to be a pretty weak form of atheism. And so the reason the signs got a lot of attention is because they looked foolish. Now Richard Dawkins is back at it again. He's in the Times of London, that is Britain's most establishment newspaper. And he's there because he is personally financing a summer camp for atheists, for their kids. We're talking about older children, teenagers, And it's following the basic scheme of a traditional summer camp. And the news stories point out that most kids who go to summer camp in Great Britain go to church camps or to scout camps. And here in the United States, you'd have to add a third, and that is private camps, which is a bit unlike Great Britain. Here in the United States, millions of school kids and teenagers spend at least 1 week, if not several weeks, in camps that are run by churches and denominations, that are run by scouts and affiliated organizations, and then this entire universe of private camps, some of them quite old, in the Adirondacks and the Berkshires, in the mountains of North Carolina and in the West, and some more recent. But what makes his camp unique is that it is to instill atheism in the young. And there are only 24 places. Now, they're all sold out, but you're talking about a country of several million people, and your bold vision is 24 places. You get in the Times of London for 24 kids at summer camp. Well, of course, there's a tug here. There's media interest when you have an atheist summer camp. It sounds very interesting. The media flock to it. But what do they find when they get there? Well, this year, because it's the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin, the evolution is going to be the main theme of the camp. It's beyond belief, by the way, is the motto of the camp. But at this particular camp, they're going to be studying evolution in the morning. They're going to be giving classes in rationalism in the morning. They're going to be challenged to do such things as to disprove a unicorn, a logical endeavor that is an exercise, a competition. Some lucky kid's going to win a note of 10 pounds, roughly $20. For solving that particular riddle. But of course, the point is, as Richard Dawkins says in an interview, disproving the existence of a negative, in this case of a unicorn, is tantamount to the fact that atheists should not be, he argues, compelled to disprove God, just to point out, to use his argument, that the burden of proof for believing in God is not as strong as it appears. Now, the problem with that particular argument is that it just doesn't hold compelling power over the public. It just isn't working. I'll tell you one of the insights I get from this, and that is the importance of worldview formation in adolescence. You know, if you are an atheist and you're trying to raise atheist children, and by the way, that's becoming more difficult. The New York Times, of all places, had a very interesting article on a 13-year-old boy in New York who was taking his parents back to church. It turns out that kids are not natural atheists. You know, on this program, we also talked about a recent article that came out in one of the scientific journals arguing that children seem to have, and evolutionists have to explain this in evolutionary terms, that children seem to have an inbred genetic predisposition to believe in intelligent design. In other words, a kid looks at a tree and doesn't think it just happened. Smart kid. Well, it turns out that teenagers are deeply involved in the process of worldview formation. You know that, I know that. But if the atheists know it and are really looking at trying to organize a summer camp to keep atheist kids atheist, it certainly ought to be a reminder to Christians of the importance of worldview formation in our own young people and children. And we need to be making sure we are taking every opportunity to help our kids understand what we believe and why we believe these things and why they are important. Summer camp is important to me. And almost all my summer camps, in fact, indeed all my summer camps, were either church or scouting based. And I was involved in both. And I love Boy Scout camping trips, and I love the camps we went to with church. And I have to tell you, long term, I think the church camps meant more to me. And that's probably true for a lot of kids right now. Right now, I am absolutely confident there are a lot of parents listening to this program, and your kids are at camp today. And you're enjoying a little break from the routine, but you're already aching to get them back. When they get back, what you hope they received at a Christian camp is a good inculcation in Christian truth. Good transformative experiences along with their peers in being deeply enriched by Bible study and the knowledge of the Christian faith. And you hope they had fun too. The canoeing and the swimming, all that's part of it. The fun with friends, that's part of it. The archery, and I saw an advertisement for a camp the other day that had riflery and archery and this incredible tree climbing thing with ropes whereby they created an entire community up in the canopy of the trees. Almost make you wish you were 12 or 13 again. But the big issue here is that worldview formation is going on. Richard Dawkins jumped the shark. He's created this atheist camp for kids. Let me ask you, what are you doing with your teenagers and older children to inculcate Christian truth in them? If the atheists know that these years are crucial, what about you? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
What do you do when your worldview becomes a parody? Now, I know the atheists don't see it that way, but I can't see it any other way, just given some of the more recent developments. And let's be honest, Christians can do very foolish things. We can make foolish arguments, and we can embarrass the gospel by showing up and defending the gospel in a foolish way. That brings disrepute upon the gospel, and we need to be very careful about that. But what we're watching right now, we're witnessing I think, the end game of this kind of atheism in terms of its public relations strategy. Now, atheism is not going to go away. I'm very glad I wrote the book on it, Atheism Remix, that I published last year, because I think it is perennially one of the great issues we're going to have to face. And in an increasingly secularized age, we're going to have more and more young people come back from the college and university campus in particular and say they're trying on atheism, even if they are not convinced atheists. But what you have in this current PR strategy of what's called the new atheism is you have an effort to try to make atheism look cool. One of the interesting things that came about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, is that Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett and several others joined with a group of younger atheists to try to rebrand atheism as, you may remember this, the Brights, B-R-I-G-H-T-S, as if bright people are atheists, and to be intelligent is to be synonymous with being an atheist. Well, that didn't work. It didn't work, first of all. The Brights, that's not exactly something that I think a focus group is going to come up with as a highly memorable and powerful name. But the other problem was, it didn't have any traction. You had too many intelligent people who are not atheists, and to imply that they are not bright, well, that wasn't bright. But you also have this parody, and again, the word parody means that you become a joke of yourself. Instead of presenting a serious argument, you overreach, and it becomes a matter of ridicule and foolishness. And I think that's exactly what happened with these atheist bus signs. I have to tell you, I don't think there are many people that are going to become atheists or agnostics or are going to be shaken from their faith by a sign that simply says there probably is no God. Well, you probably will not be run over by that bus this afternoon. But that is not something that's going to shake your worldview. And it seems such a weak argument. You know, if you're going to be an atheist, then show up with a genuinely atheistic argument. Show up with an argument that says you're an idiot if you believe in God. That'd be a better bus sign. I don't think it would convince more people, but I'd have more respect for it. Rather than the statement, there probably is no God. I mean, that sounds like Woody Allen. If I'm going to debate an atheist, I want it to be a genuine, serious, Christopher Hitchens kind of atheist who says, I don't have intellectual respect for you if you believe in God. That's at least honest. The atheist summer camp, that's the other issue. Jumping the shark right there. Now, having the summer camp is not the foolish part. It's going after all this attention when your bold plan only has space for 24 kids in a nation of several million. But it also gets back to the personal credibility of Richard Dawkins. This is obviously something he's attaching himself to, and a man who had been known as a serious scholar is now primarily known as an evangelist for atheism. And that's the future he has chosen. Now, there is a serious side to this, no doubt about it, a very serious side. And I have to tell you, I think the most serious part of it is the fact that Richard Dawkins honestly believes that humanity is threatened by people who believe in God. He does. That's in his book. It's very clear. He believes that humanity would be far better off if the God believers went away. And then we would be left only with people that didn't believe in God. It's a very, very serious argument that he is making. Not a cogent argument. Not a winning argument, but it is a serious argument. And I think that's what explains what's going on here. He's so serious about this. He sees belief in God as the one thing he now wishes to eradicate more than anything else. And so he is giving himself to it in such an unreserved way that he is willing, I think, to become a spectacle and even undermine his reputation for seriousness with the bus signs and the atheist summer camp and all the rest. Interesting response has come digitally by email, by Facebook, and by Twitter. The Twitter response, you know, this just goes to show how much of a religion atheism or secular humanism really is. Well, that's exactly right, John. What you're looking at here is the emulation of a church camp, right down to the songs that are sung at night, but in this case, they're atheist songs about unbelief. Someone else wrote in to say, if you are relegated to buses and the kids at camp to spread the most important truth, what does that say about your truth? Well, I think one of the things it says to this rather smart observer, the man that wrote me this, is that there really aren't that many people willing to stake their reputation on atheism. Even after the new atheists are selling their books by the millions, you don't see a lot of celebrities, a lot of politicians, a lot of influencers, even a lot of college and university professors ready to go on a national platform and say, yes, I'm joining the crusade, I'm an atheist, come with us, we're going to change the world. Instead, what you see is a sign on the side of the bus that says there probably is no God. We'll be right back. Probably. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Interesting response. Brian wrote in to say, wow, I bet atheistic summer camps have the worst camp cheers you could imagine. I bet they've got bad music, too. I mean, it's like Kumbaya somebody. Kumbaya, it's going to be sad stuff because it's mimicking, and that's what several people have written in to say. This is in one sense a way, again, that atheists can't get around theism as their point of reference. They hate the fact that the very name by which their worldview is described, atheism, has theism right in the heart of it. It's just that little old alpha privative out front, that A in front of theism that means not a theist. They have to talk about God in order to say what they don't believe in. The one they do not believe in is God. They wish they didn't have to talk about God, but the only way they can describe their worldview is to say they don't talk about God. And now they find themselves saying, come to summer camp and we'll teach you about what not to believe. And yeah, I just would find that a very hard sell. I'm glad I'm not an agent for this camp because I think it would be tough. That's not to say they wouldn't be interested in it, though, the parents in particular. You know, a recent study came out, we talked about it on this program, the New York Times gave it a lot of attention, about conversion between adolescence and adulthood, and it pointed out that the group that lost the most were atheists and agnostics and secularists. Those that disbelieving parents tend to have more children who turn out to be believers than believing parents turn out to have children that are unbelievers. And again, I'm just going to go back to the fact that we as Christians have an understanding of why it's so. And it's not just about the intellectual power of the understanding that there is a God. That's a big part of it. The intellectual understanding that, just as that child looks at a tree and says, that didn't just happen, so also that meme, to use that word by Richard Dawkins, is hard to get away from. But there's more to it than that, because we as Christians believe that human beings are the only creature made in the image of God. And that a part of being made in the image of God is that the capacity to know the Creator is there. And the knowledge that there is a Creator, that there is a God, that there is a Maker, the knowledge that we were known before we know, that's a huge part of the Christian understanding of what it means to be made in the image of God. And thus, we believe that every human creature is there. And so you have someone like Augustine, the great Christian theologian of the late 4th and early 5th centuries, who said classically, my heart had no rest until it found its rest in thee. There are a lot of restless hearts out there, and they will have no rest. And you know, one of the periods of life at which there is the most unrest is adolescence. The Sturm und Drang, to use the old German term, of adolescence is classical. And that's one of the reasons why it is so important for Christians to have their adolescent children in the right kind of context, because the peer context is very important. The context of being around believing Christians who are serious about sharing their faith, credible in defending the faith, adults who will give children, adolescent children in particular, the respect of dealing with serious questions and offering serious answers. That's something that's really, really important for Christian young people. So I'm far less concerned with sending our kids to camp just in order to canoe and kayak and swim. That's all great stuff, and there's nothing wrong with it and everything right about it. But what really makes a Christian camp Christian, what makes a Christian youth program Christian, what makes Christian parenting Christian, is a serious, undeniable, undiluted, winsome, intellectually credible attentiveness to the gospel of Christ. That's what makes all the difference. And an interesting question come in from someone interested in teenagers, and the question is very straightforward. It's a question about a book. I always like book questions. What is the best book, Kevin writes, that is not huge and doesn't give a brain cramp to give to a teenager on the subject of atheism and engaging the culture? I love the question. Last thing I want to do is give a brain cramp. But you know what? I think that one of the books I would recommend here is Lee Strobel's book, The Case for Faith. And there's a series, The Case for a Creator, The Case for Christ. And Lee Strobel was a journalist. He writes like a journalist. Maybe less likely to give you a brain cramp, but also some good material that I think a teenager could really sink his or her teeth into. Now, forgive this, but I'm going to recommend my own book, Atheism Remix, published by Crossway, which is a direct critique of the new atheism, and I think especially older teenagers could find some real reassurance by knowing that there are good arguments against what these new atheists are putting forth. Now here's one of the things they're putting forth that has direct relevance to our topic today. One of the things that Richard Dawkins, for instance, has said, and in my book I detail 7 particular features of this new atheism. Atheism isn't new, but the new atheism is coming with a new package. And one part of that packaging, one central concern of the new atheists, Richard Dawkins front and center, is that he accuses Christian parents of inculcating in their children and teenagers Christian faith. He accuses those Christian parents of child abuse. He says it is theological or spiritual child abuse to inculcate your own theistic, religious, God-centered beliefs, Christian convictions, in your children. It's quite a claim, isn't it? I'll tell you one of the reasons why you need to know about it. It is because there is a movement, not just to scare you, but there is a movement among some to define a Bill of Rights for children, some effort in the United Nations and another international fora to try to get something like this through, a Bill of Rights for children that would say that they have the right not to be inculcated into a belief system until they are supposedly old enough. But then you go back to the obvious question, and that is, if Richard Dawkins thinks that it is spiritual child abuse to inculcate your own belief system in your children, then what's going on with the summer camp? Does he get a pass? In other words, is inculcating atheism, secularism, rationalism, humanism in your kids? Is that safe? That's not child abuse? Well, I think the logical fallacy there becomes immediately clear. But you know what? With all respect to Richard Dawkins, if I were an atheist, impossible for me to imagine that. I'm sure I would want to inculcate that in my children. If I had any kind of serious intellectual commitment, I would want to inculcate that in my children. If I believed that life and death was hanging in the balance, that eternity and the judgment of God was facing in the future, you bet I would want to inculcate the Christian gospel in my children. And I do. Hope you do too. It's about a whole lot more than summer camp, and it's about a whole lot more than watching Richard Dawkins make a parody of himself. This is kind of a wake-up call just to let us know, yes, worldview formation in adolescence is really important. The atheists know it. That's why they're starting summer camps. They may be small in number, but they're big in symbolic power. And when it comes to worldview formation in adolescence, folks, we've got a big task. It starts with parents. Parents have the non-negotiable, non-transferable responsibility. But it gets right down to youth ministry in the local church. It gets down to the educational choices parents make for their kids. It gets down to the peer culture that you arrange for your children. And it gets down to treating children and teenagers as serious thinkers, for they are. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Good discussion. Always glad to hear from you, especially good chatter we got on Twitter today and by some other digital formats. We're always glad to hear from you. And again, want to encourage you to follow the discussion on Twitter. Decided to follow Albert Mueller. And if you like, also add Mueller Radio, but add Albert Mueller. I try to keep a fairly constant stream of things to prod some conversation and perhaps some thinking along the course of the day. One of the things I would draw to your attention today, by the way, is an article by Thomas Sowell, one of my favorite economists and a keen observer of things in the culture. He had a very interesting op-ed piece published in many newspapers over the weekend in which he basically argued that college is not for everyone. Now, I just want to look at that argument with you for a moment. I mentioned educational choices as we were going into the last break, and educational choices are a prime concern of most parents, if not all, and of many teenagers and adolescents as well. I'm going to argue with his thesis just a bit when he says college isn't for everyone. I believe that some kind of college is basically for everyone, but I agree with his main point, which is the four-year liberal arts education is not for everyone. You know, just in terms of a cost-benefit analysis, the argument often comes that if your kid doesn't go to college, he's not going to be a success in life. She's never going to get anywhere. Well, my point is that from a Christian perspective, life formation is about a whole lot more than that expectation. But from a cost-benefit analysis, it isn't even holding up anymore. Just in terms of the classic four-year liberal arts degree, let's face it, in this economy, that might get you where you want to go, but it might not. If you want to go to graduate school or law school, if you want to go into a professional school, then an undergraduate four-year degree is absolutely necessary, and you need a good one from a good institution. If you are going to be, after all, teaching and going into higher education, if you're interested and have the aptitude to really have a fulfilling college and university experience in the liberal arts, then go for it. If you're going for a business degree and you intend to go into business or management, then you know where that leads, and probably not only the BS in business administration or the BA, but also a Master of Business Administration, the MBA degree. There are all kinds of routes that just make immediate sense, but I want to put another one before you. If you've got a teenager in your home and she or he is not sure exactly what they need to do, then consider how to make progress rather painlessly. Don't force the decision artificially, especially when it comes to a lot of boys and young men. Unfortunately, they do not know exactly what they want to do, and you're not sure exactly what their aptitude might be. Do not panic. Their life is not over at 18, but do not let them stay still, and do not let them be lazy. Get them in some kind of college program at the local community college or at your local state university or Christian school. Get them involved in something like in the British gap year, where you can discover what their aptitude is. See, here's something. When they get to study what they want to study, you're going to find out what they really want to study. You'll find out where their aptitude is, and in all likelihood, you'll find a path towards something that, to God's glory, can be a real gift to the church, to the community, and to their lives. There are more options than you think, and we'll be talking about that more in programs to come. I'll meet you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.